It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's time for the State Capitol Report. In today's issue, we're talking about the two-year, $87.5 billion state budget Governor Evers signed this summer, a new bill that would shore up paper mills and get a response to the hospitalization of Republican state lawmaker Andre Jock. Joining us is Janet Bewley, a Democratic state senator who represents a large chunk of Northwest Wisconsin. The district includes Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. She's also the Senate Minority Leader. And what questions do you have for Senator Bewley? Do you live in her district, in Superior, Rice Lake, or elsewhere? What do you want to know about the state budget, paper mills, or schools returning to in-person learning? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Bewley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's start with your colleague, Andre Jock. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on Wednesday that he was hospitalized with COVID-19 and is currently breathing with the help of a ventilator. What has been your reaction to that news?
Oh, I think it's tragic. He has a large family. It being in a situation like that must be terrifying for his children. I just know that as a mom, I would worry about my kids first, of course. But Andre, he's suffering, and we should be thinking of him and his family at this time.
And how has this impacted, the state legislature as a whole to have one of your colleagues in what is a pretty dire situation at the moment?
Well, we haven't gone to the floor recently, so we're not seeing each other in person. But I do know that the Democratic caucus is concerned very much for Senator Jock's well-being. And we're also concerned about the well-being of the people of Wisconsin. We don't want anyone to suffer in this way. We want no loss of life because of COVID. So we're continuing to try to help people understand that vaccines are the best way to go. We still need to think about wearing masks and just to give the people of Wisconsin a chance to sort of collect themselves and think about what is best for them and for the state as a whole.
Well, let's stick with COVID-19 because the school year is, starting to ramp up. How do you feel about the return of students to schools and campuses, as we see this surge in cases due to the Delta variant?
I know that families are very concerned, and I know that school boards and communities are being torn apart by it. We have school districts here in the north that have chosen to wear masks. We have some that have decided not to enforce that. But the thing that I'm most concerned about are the emotions that come into the room, and particularly at these school board meetings, where people just go after each other in such a cruel way. I regret that very much because these are issues about our well-being as a whole and, of course, about individual rights when it comes to raising your children. But the fact that it's bringing out certainly not our better angels at this moment, but a lot of demons are coming out during this. And I regret that very much. And I'm hoping that we can get through this and that we'll have a great outcome at the end.
We are talking about state politics with Senate Minority Leader Janet Bewley. She represents the 25th District in northern Wisconsin. And sticking with education, this has been slightly controversial, but should teachers and, school staff be required to get vaccinated now that the FDA has fully approved, the Pfizer vaccine? It's no longer just under emergency authorization. It's fully approved.
Well, would I want to see everyone safe? Of course, I do. Is there any entity right here that has the authority to enforce that? Right now, it's up to the districts. It's up to each individual district to make the decision. And we have no way in this state because the governor and DHS cannot make a a ruling like that according to the legislature. So it is left up to these individual school boards. So that is where it should be. Of course, that's the system that we have. It's about local control. But it isn't a very pretty sight right now. I'm hoping that school districts can make the best decision. I personally would hope for wearing masks, and I know that most teachers want to have the vaccine and have it. It's a matter of making sure that you have a policy consistent in the entire school.
So, Senator Bewley, if it were to come up, would you support legislation that would potentially require vaccines for all teachers if it were to come up?
Well, I'm not sure if it ever would, and I understand that you would love an answer out of me on that one. It's a very, very difficult issue, and it's one that is at the heart of democracy, which is individual rights versus the common good. I mean, I think most issues that we ever struggle over are about that, individual freedom versus the common good. And we're going to end up talking about most issues that face us that break down to that very basic separation and approach to government. I'm more on the common good side. I believe that we're all better when we're all better, and we will all be healthy if each one of us try to be healthy. So I know that it's very difficult. I have a hard time envisioning what that kind of legislation would look like. My outcome is for people, if for communities to be functioning well, and for people to be healthy.
Well, let's switch gears then and look at the state budget. You voted for it this summer. It had been pretty substantially revised by your Republican colleagues. Governor Evers ultimately signed it, but called for more spending on education. Where do you think are our most pressing needs right now, certainly as it comes to education funding?
Right now, we just need a healthy budget overall, and we need specific funding for the children and families that need it the most. We are still at only one-third funding for special education. We still have a very serious need for mental health and behavioral health services in our schools. Most of the programs received a tiny increase or none at all. So you take a system that has been pretty consistently beaten up over the last 10 years, and then put COVID on top of it, and you're going to find that services for struggling students are going to be pretty threadbare. I think it is so important that we realize that our kids are going through a lot of problems and struggles. They had a whole year of going either back and forth to school or virtual, and now we're asking them to come back. They have to see their communities fight over mask mandates and vaccines, and we also know then that we still don't have the basic funding to run our schools in a way that our kids deserve. So I'm very disappointed, and I think it all came down to the Republicans' willingness to not have the maintenance of funding that would allow $2.4 billion. They were willing to risk that, and I just find that just sad. It's very sad.
You signed on to this budget. As we said, it is different than what Democrats had wanted. Is there anything that, in hindsight, you wish had stayed in the budget, something in the state outside of education that is really hurting for funding right now?
I'll go right. I'll sound like a broken record, but the Medicaid funds that are waiting for us in Washington, we have denied that to the people of Wisconsin through four budgets now. This is the fourth, and billions of dollars in healthcare and Medicaid funding were lost. Billions. And it was in the budget again. And this is money that Wisconsin taxpayers have already paid in their federal taxes. We are one of 11 states that have not accepted Medicaid expansion. And to me, it's tragic that every budget needs to be based on this lack of funding.
You're listening to the State Capitol Report. Our guest is Democratic State Senator Janet Buley, and you can call in now to join the conversation at 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson, and it's the State Capitol Report. Our guest is State Senator Janet Buley. She represents the 25th State Senate District in northwestern Wisconsin, and we're talking about a special investigation into elections, unemployment, and more, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Now, Senator Buley, you recently introduced a bill that would authorize the state to award loans up to $50 million for the Verso paper mill in Wisconsin Rapids and $15 million for the Park Falls pulp and paper mill in Park Falls. Can you talk a little bit more about why the state should provide assistance to support these paper mills?
Well, I know more about Park Falls, but the paper industry and everything around wood in our forest is very significant to the state of Wisconsin. I introduced this bill with my colleagues because we do have the ability to loan this amount of money, and we needed a new bill because the one that was introduced by the Republicans used COVID funds for, or would have tapped COVID funds for the purpose of these loans. And we have no assurances. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of skepticism from the feds when it comes to whether or not it would be eligible. Therefore, the governor vetoed that bill. I introduced this bill, which has the same amounts of money. It's just that it would come from funds that we already have available that the WEDC could use. So It's a struggle for me to understand why the Republicans are reluctant to do it this way. We have the money. We know that it is there. We have looked at the projections or received projections about revenue. So it is a surprise to me. These are mills that support an industry that's been going on in our state for a long, long time. And we know that the Verso mill, it's larger, will need to be sort of reformatted to provide different products. And the one in Park Falls, which is smaller, is ready to go. We just need the $15 million loan to get it fully back up and running. But that mill has the capacity, has the customers. They've got the customers to sell their products to, and they have the employees. So that one is really, really packaged well and ready to go. I would love to have Republicans join me on this one and my colleagues, because if we could get to the floor with this, we could make a difference in these communities very, very quickly.
Well, let's continue on, because I want to get to unemployment benefits. You know, the federal government's enhanced unemployment benefits are scheduled to expire in about a week. These benefits have provided about $300 per week on top of their Wisconsin benefits. And, you know, Governor Tony Evers vetoed a bill that would have ended the benefits early. Where do you stand currently on, you know, these enhanced unemployment benefits for Wisconsin residents?
Well, the interesting thing is that we know that people are spending this money in their local economies, and so that means the businesses that are on Main Street, typically on things that make a difference in children's lives. This is where you can get school clothes, where you can get additional food. I think that so much is focused on this additional funds, which is just used to keep families going, when all the attention is paid to, is used to blaming it for the lack of employment. We know that the state, certainly up here in the north, we have a workforce shortage. We had it going into the pandemic, and the pandemic is making it worse. Now going back, we realize just how critical the childcare situation is. So many people cannot go back to work because they do not have childcare. And many people think that it's easy to find, that you have family that could watch your children for you, when in fact, everybody is trying hard to work, and there's there are very few resources for childcare. Childcare, much like the CNAs in our nursing homes, those are very low-paying jobs. But they're taking care of the most precious and vulnerable lives in our state. We need a way to provide child care so that people can confidently look for work and join the ranks of the employed.
Is there any hunger in the legislature to maybe craft legislation that would bolster any sort of child care initiatives in the state?
Well, I know my Democratic colleagues are. But there has been resistance to fund programs like this from the Republicans. I would hope that they would realize just how significant childcare is for the workforce shortage. We have statistics. We know just how critical it is, but we've not seen much enthusiasm from that side of the aisle.
We are talking about state politics right now with Senate Minority Leader Janet Buley. She represents the 25th District in northern Wisconsin. Now, on Wednesday, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss issued a statement supporting the hiring of independent contractors to complete a cyber forensic audit of the 2020 elections to ensure, quote, that issues did not happen. Do you support the reviews of the 2020 election?
We have had so many reviews. I'm not sure how many times you can count the beans in the jar. I mean, do it over and over and over, and now a forensic audit. I think that those are flashy names to continue to have people focus on the past, when indeed we can't dwell back there. We have issues that are right in front of us that we must look at and go forward. I am very disappointed that this is being rehashed over and over in our state, when every time we have done an audit or recounted or anything, we get the same results. Now, I'm not going to burden you with what happens when you do the same thing over and over again and get the same outcome, but it's true in this case. It's madness, and we don't have the time, and we're not going to get a different answer. We've got to move on.
How do you think this impacts voters, especially as we head into a midterm election year?
Well, I think the voters are energized on many issues. I think that we are all hoping for fair maps. We are hoping for the opportunity to see our voters vote on the issues that they are concerned about, that they really want to see happen in our state. And I think that it's going to be an interesting election cycle. We have to reelect the governor. We have to, of course, always have the people in place in the Senate, the Democrats that we need to uphold the governor's veto should it be challenged. And now we have quite a few congressional seats that are now open because of retirements. So it's going to be a very interesting election cycle.
You just mentioned, maps. We are about to be redistricting in Wisconsin because we have this new census data. The Republicans want to keep it within the state. The Democrats have already appealed to federal courts. How do you see this playing out over the next few months?
Well, I believe it is going to go to the courts. We may have a few initial stabs at coming up with a fair map, the first, second, or third round, but I don't think I think that it's pretty clear that the Democrats and the Republicans are not going to come up with something that satisfies both of us. So it will go to the courts. There's differing ways to look at the courts to think which one would you prefer. Clearly, the Republicans believe that they have a little more, they're a little closer to the state Supreme Court, so that's where they would prefer to have it go. But I think that ultimately it will take a federal decision to solve this problem.
Well, Senator Buley, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Janet Buley is a Democratic state senator who represents a large chunk of Northwest Wisconsin. She's also the Senate Minority Leader and has been a member of the state Senate since 2014. Up next is news, and then we continue the state capitol report with State Superintendent Jill Underley. We're talking about the school year amid a surge in COVID cases. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent, and it's the State Capitol Report right now. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley joins us. Teachers and students head back to school for in-person learning this fall amid a surge of COVID-19 cases due to the Delta variant, and we want to hear from you. Do you have a school-aged kid at home? Are they going to in-person learning? Are they sticking with virtual school? What precautions is your local school district taking against COVID-19 this fall? Do you think it's enough, or do you think it doesn't go far enough? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Superintendent Underley, welcome back to the morning show.
Hello, I can't hear you.
Superintendent Underley, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Thank you.
There,
good morning.
There we go. Always that technology. It's always, you never know what's going to happen with it, but we've got people on it, working on it. So Superintendent Underley, we're talking about returning to school amid COVID. Can you explain some of the measures that schools are taking to, you know, help stop spreading in classrooms, you know, mitigating all of that? Can you just maybe take a deep dive into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just good morning. Happy Monday. Happy to be
here. Happy Monday.
it's my favorite time of year, back to school. You know, it's really interesting. I think school districts are coming into alignment, you know, as far as mitigation strategies that they're taking. You know, I'm certainly learning that, you know, obviously we want to keep kids safe. We want a safe return to school. And so school districts are, you know, looking at masking. They're looking at vaccines for staff and students ages 12 and up if they haven't received them yet. They're also looking at ways to clean more. I know that last year, many of the successful school districts that were able to stay open had a combination of those mitigation factors.
So the State Department of Public Instruction and the State Department of Health Services recently sent out guidance for schools to help keep students and staff safe from the coronavirus. Can you talk about what was in some of that guidance?
Right. So, you know, in order to keep our schools open, and that's the primary thing, right? You know, face-to-face learning, keeping our kids, our students, and our staff safe, by extension, our families safe, you know, and also trying to make things as normal as possible. A lot of the guidance addressed how to do that, how to keep our schools open. For example, practicing mitigation measures such as getting the vaccine if you're eligible, wearing a mask, practicing good hygiene, wearing masks on school buses, which is actually a federal requirement. So that's where it is. It's really just the best practices, you know, in order to prevent the spreads.
So mask wearing, potential vaccination, keeping these spaces clean for students and staff. Let's stick right now with masks, which have been pretty controversial, especially when it comes to schools. Some parents have been very vocal about, you know, opposing their kids wearing masks in school. And last week, a really large group of parents shut down a meeting of the Kenosha School Board. Let's take a quick listen to School Board Chair Yolanda Adams, who ended that meeting for capacity reasons.
We need to find a bigger venue, so I will adjourn the meeting and we will hold it on another day.
So we're hearing the tension happening between, you know, school board members and parents. But at the same time, you know, 500 pediatricians signed a letter urging school districts to adopt a mask mandate. You know, what is your response, Superintendent Underlee, to what we're hearing from parents versus what we're hearing from pediatricians?
Right. So the pediatricians are spot on, right? You know, I'm frustrated also that people aren't following science. And, you know, when people feel like, well, I'm going to research this on my own or go against the medical profession, I mean, that to me is really kind of bonkers. You know, I'm frustrated, but, you know, public schools are supposed to serve all kids. And when there are no mask mandates, for example, our medically fragile kids, they no longer have access. And that's an issue. And if our job is to protect kids at our schools, you know, we have to make sure that they get the best education possible. And we have to have our schools open to do that. And the best way to do this is to have masks and get the vaccine if you can. And the other piece of this is that this will pass. I mean, it's a temporary inconvenience. I'm tired of masks too, but darn it, I'm going to wear one because it protects others and it'll keep our hospitals from being overrun. It'll keep our schools open and our kids and our staff safe. And what I would say is that we need to protect the vulnerable kids and our staff. And again, this is going to pass. Our schools did not cause this pandemic. We have to deal with it with like everybody else. And the best way that we do that through the lens of protecting our kids and our staff is by wearing masks.
We are talking about back to school with the head of Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, it's State Superintendent Jill Underlee, and you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. And I want to get back to the parents for a second. These parents that have been against a mask mandate, they say that it intrudes upon their children's freedom, that it's distracting for students. What do you say to those parents?
I know that there's a majority of parents who want a safe return to school and they support the mitigation measures. And I would say that for those who are the anti-masking, your kids are watching, you know, your fellow parents and your neighbors are watching, but understand that our school's number one responsibility is to care for and teach kids. And to do that, we need to have our schools open. And for us to have our schools open, we need mitigation measures such as masking. Kids wear face coverings all the time, you know, scarves, the health profession, they've worn masks for, you know, in order to mitigate the spread of disease throughout their entire careers. It's a temporary inconvenience, but the long-term benefit is great.
You know, there are school districts in other states that are requiring teachers and staff to get vaccinated. Is that something that you would support in Wisconsin?
You know, I've really thought a lot about this. And the industries that are pushing this are higher education, tourism, travel, the bars and restaurants. And they're the industries that lost the most, quote unquote, business, so to speak, during COVID. And as for school districts and education, I know that anecdotally, teachers have a high vaccination rate. They want to be in schools. They want to be face-to-face with kids. They didn't like virtual learning either. Most teachers support vaccine mandates, anecdotally, because, again, COVID has been so disruptive. When you think about the shortage of teachers, you think about the shortage of bus drivers, the shortage of substitute teachers. And a vaccine is a mitigation strategy that ensures that not only are staff and students and families safe, but our schools can remain open for face-to-face. So if a school board or another industry feels that this is one of their mitigation strategies, then yes, they need to have a vaccine mandate.
Well, the decision comes down, as you said, school district to school district. You could look at one where they might say, we are requiring masks, we're requiring vaccinations, and they can make that decision. But then you might have another that doesn't implement any sort of mitigation measures at all. Do you in your role, do you sometimes wish that your department could, you know, implement a more uniform policy for schools in the state?
You know, I've thought about this too. And I think, you know, it just kind of comes down to this for me. It's going to pass. It's a temporary inconvenience. Our school districts need to protect the most vulnerable kids that we have in our, and that means masking everybody. Here's something I would just kind of leave people with is think about peanut allergies, which are unfortunately very common. And what have we done about that in our schools? I mean, we've become nut free, right? It's a no brainer. So when I think about those who are anti-masking, I think if a kid had a peanut allergy and the school said, okay, we need to protect the vulnerable here, we're peanut free, are we going to get parents coming to our school board meetings throwing, you know, crowding them out because they have the right to eat peanuts or that candy bar? I mean, we have to protect the vulnerable kids and our staff. And in our state, we are a local control state. We want our school boards, who are locally elected, you know, for oversight, among other things, to make these decisions on their own.
We are talking to State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley right now on the State Capitol Report. A new school year is starting and much of in-person instruction is back during the pandemic. And we are taking your calls at 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. On the Ideas Network, I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Thanks for joining us this morning. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley joins us. We're talking about education, from school funding to the challenges of teaching amid the surge of COVID-19 cases, and you can join the conversation now. Are you a teacher? Do you work in a school? What are your thoughts about another year in education during the pandemic? How do you feel about schools requiring masks in classrooms? And if you are a teacher, would you support either a mask mandate or a vaccination mandate? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Now, Superintendent Underley on Friday, WPR reported that about 60% of Wisconsin's public schools and 13% of its private schools have opted into a free school-based COVID-19 testing program for students. Can you talk about that right now?
Yeah, I mean, testing is certainly one of those ways that you could disrupt learning loss, because what we learned last year, I mean, we're learning every day about this pandemic and the virus. But what would often be so disruptive is that you would have somebody who tested positive, and then we'd have to contact trace, and then before long, we were shutting down the school and having to go to virtual learning. So if you can opt into a testing program, to help with that contact tracing. So anybody who would be nearby, you know, generally they would say, like, if you didn't have a mask on or if you were sitting, you know, within several feet of somebody, you were a close contact, testing that person so that they can get the information right away if they have COVID or not. And we can keep our kids in school face to face, or if it's a staff member, keeping that teacher in front of the classroom.
Are these rapid tests that are happening basically at the schools themselves?
Yes. As far as I know that school districts partner with different medical providers throughout the state. So depending on where you are, and some schools we also have to recognize are not near, you know, a medical provider. Some schools don't have school nurses. And so the testing may come to the school, but they may also have to outsource it too.
Rachel from Manitowoc called, but unfortunately couldn't stay with us. She says school practices extend beyond the walls of schools. She says that she and her husband are registered nurses and that if her kids were to get sick, they wouldn't be able to take care of COVID patients, they wouldn't be able to work. What are your thoughts about kind of that interconnectedness between the schools, families, and the broader, you know, work world?
No, that's an excellent point. We have a lot of kids who live with those who are first responders or medical professionals. And I encountered this last year as a superintendent when, a family, several kids got sick because of of COVID, their parents could not go to work and serve on the front lines in our hospitals and serving patients there. Or maybe they work with medically fragile individuals in the hospital, maybe on like an oncology floor. I mean, that really, we're all connected. And I think that's really the biggest picture here. I mean, we are all connected, and the caller was absolutely right. I mean, what happens at school impacts our families, which impacts our businesses, which impacts commerce, it impacts everything. We saw that, you know, as things shut down, because schools, you know, provide essential services to our communities. We saw a dip in workforce employment, especially among mothers. And I mean, we're going to have impacts and effects of this long term. And so I think, you know, trying to do our part, remembering that we're all in this together. We're all tired of wearing masks. We're all tired of COVID. So let's do what we can to make sure that we kick this thing to the curb, and so that we can get back to functioning as normal as possible.
So I want to take a look at learning loss. It's something that happens, or we'll see it crop up in the summer. Some kids fall a little bit behind because there's a break. COVID-19 has really exacerbated that, and it's causing a lot of parents to be concerned that their kids are much further behind. Can you talk a little bit about learning loss and really where our state kids are at?
Sure. I'll just kind of preface this that I think we need to find a different word other than loss, because it is a deficit way of looking at things. I mean, learning happened. It did not happen at perhaps the speed we wanted it to, but learning happened. And I know school districts are taking stock of where kids are, and as they always have, they're meeting kids where they are. But we have to look at the bigger picture also when it comes to learning. I mean, mental health is a big issue, as it was before the pandemic. Our schools are meeting kids where they are and addressing all of their needs so that they can learn at the rates that we expect them to. I mean, we have to meet other needs before we can assume kids are going to learn most fully. And I mean, there's also technological divides. You know, we have to address that as well. I mean, the schools that were better positioned to serve kids virtually, when you think about the schools that had one-to-one computer technology where kids were taking those home, where you had mental health supports or adequate numbers of social workers and counselors in your schools, or partnerships with mental health in your community. You know, those are the things that we know that are going to help kids learn. And so the schools that don't have those things, those kids are not going to be learning at the same high rates. And it, unfortunately, it has a lot to do with socioeconomics too, right? So again, mental health is a big issue, excuse me, as it was before the pandemic, the technological divides. We also have facility differences. I mean, we shouldn't put all of this on our kids and on our teachers, because there are structural things that we need to address so that our students can become successful adults. And again, we need to remember that this is a pandemic. Our kids are surviving just like the rest of us, and we need to give everyone some grace.
We are talking about back to school with the head of Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, State Superintendent Jill Underley, and we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. Because we were just talking about sort of the socioeconomic breakdowns between school districts, I want to really quickly ask you about the state budget. You know, it was much different than maybe Democrats in the legislature wanted. Governor Evers signed it, but he did call on more education funding. You know, what is your response to, I guess, the funding that schools have now versus what the governor is calling for?
Yeah, I think our community members need to be prepared, because in a couple of years, when we are looking at our next biennial budget, we're going to have a funding cliff, because what we experienced is no increase in state funding for our schools. We were told, use all the federal dollars that you received, but those federal dollars were really one-time grants for all intents and purposes to address COVID. Meanwhile, I mean, costs increase. You know, you've got inflation, you've got also salaries, you've got utilities. I mean, there's a lot of other things that we need to address. Plus, you know, the regular maintenance on your school buildings. So it wasn't what we hoped for. I mean, we've been doing more with less for the past 10 years. We really need to look at our how we fund our schools, because the burden is increasing upon our local communities, and it's just exacerbating inequities when it comes to funding.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit, but kind of stick with that theme, because we talk a lot about the resources that kids need. And one of the resources that we frequently hear about is food, making sure kids are fed. And the Waukesha School District recently made national headlines for opting out of a federal meals program. The Department of Public Instruction says that Waukesha is the only state school district to opt out. They got a lot of criticism for that. They're going to reevaluate that. But what is your reaction to how this story has developed over the last few days?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. The thing is, it's like, again, going back to what do kids need, right? What do kids need to thrive? And the whole point of public school is to provide that even playing field, right? So that everybody gets the best opportunity. And that's why we provide services in our school for special education or gifted and talented or mental health. I mean, technology. I mean, there's certain things that you can get in school that you can't get out of school. And food is one of those. And kids need breakfast and lunch. And our school lunch programs and school breakfast programs are incredible. I mean, they are so good. And the other piece of it is there's so much stigma, of course, attached to that, for people who maybe were on free and reduced lunch. And schools have eliminated that stigma. And I think, you know, by providing the meals to all kids this year, as the U.S. Department of Agriculture has, I think that also takes steps at eliminating the stigma, but also ensuring that every child has what they need to succeed every day.
Let's talk about school board resignations. In Minnesota, the Star Tribune has documented that there have been a lot of early retirements on school boards. And then recently, three members of Oconomowoc's school board resigned over disagreements. How concerning is this for you, in your current role?
Yeah, it's very concerning because, again, schools didn't cause this, right? Schools did not cause the pandemic. I feel people are misplacing their anger. And again, it's really difficult because we have so many shortages already. Teachers become administrators, involved parents and community members become school board members. We need that leadership in our communities. And there's, this vocal minority that is really working hard to undermine our public school system. And if we don't right the ship on this, I mean, we're going to be really feeling the impacts of this for, decades to come. So we really need to do what we can. Those of you who are so supportive of your schools, reach out, encourage, send a note to your child's teacher, or send notes to your school board members or your superintendents, just telling them that you appreciate their leadership right now during this tough time. Again, it's a pandemic. Nobody's done this before, and people are doing the best they can to look out for our kids and our communities.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. State Superintendent for Public Instruction Jill Underly joined us this morning. This was the State Capitol Report. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.